Hi everyone, I'm delighted to welcome the Anyone team to have a discussion about why they started the company, what does the future of the audio economy look like, and what does conversational design actually entail in the 21st century. I'm joined by Alfred and Vieira from the Anyone team. Welcome. We're delighted to partner with both of you.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Delighted to join you.
So, Alfred, let me start with you. Tell us a bit about your career and what was the founding journey of Anyone actually entail?
Yeah, that's a question that always, if you run the risk of talking for half an hour, so I'm going to try to make it very short and try to find some cohesion in it. But I spent the majority of my career at Google in marketing and product. I kind of come from a general marketing background. When I left Google, I promised myself that I would never do a startup. And I felt quite burnt out by technology. And then together with my co-founder, David, came up with this idea, which was just one of those things we had to pursue. And the insight behind it kind of came from reflecting on the career that we've both had. We both reached quite senior corporate positions. And one of the things we immediately realized when we left was that we lost access to networks. And that one of the greatest benefits of being a kind of a senior leader in technology was just the access you have to amazing people to learn and to grow and develop. And the irony that kind of the place where you need it the least at the top of a tech organization is when you can access it the most. And we set out to try to find a way where we could flip that and level the playing field and see if everyone could get the same access as we had once had, and if that could be solved with technology.
And that's really interesting that both you and your co-founder and Vera, who were speaking to before we started, your undergraduate degrees are all in liberal arts, or at least both the co-founders. And we love that, you know, because personally, my foundational degree was mechanical engineering, and then I got an MBA. Apart from that, there are degrees in philosophy and liberal arts, which I believe makes me, you know, a slightly more well-rounded leader. And personally, at Network Capital, our mission is to enable people to have the career transitions and build their category of one, and especially when liberal arts people build product companies, we love it. So kudos to you and your co-founder and the entire team. Tell us the early days. Why build Anyone? What was the story like? How did you both of you meet? And why did you decide to build it?
So I think what we set out, like, what are the challenges? How come people aren't accessible to people who need help or advice, for example? And at first, we saw them as a couple of very kind of human but technical challenges. So our first reflection was just on how broken Calendar was. Calendar had been designed on our phones and optimized for our screens in a way that you should be able to basically see 24 hours on the day on a tiny format, which created this strange behavior that every meeting in the world was either 30 or 60 minutes. And no one questioned if they needed 30 or 60 minutes. And they became kind of yardsticks or measurements for how important a meeting was. So if you needed to make an important decision, it was 60 minutes. And if you just needed to talk something through, it was 30. And in our experience, we grew up and had our career in offices, most important decisions could be made in 1-2 minutes. It was a knock on someone's door. And then you made a decision, or you huddle around, in the kitchen and gather the right decision makers, and the decision was made in 2 minutes. So we kind of saw this sort of asymmetry between what the calendar in itself had created. And the second thing we thought about at the time, and this was before COVID, we had already felt kind of Zoom fatigue, and just how adding video meetings to that 60 minutes for any random meeting you needed to have in an organization made them longer, more awkward, and they made them like physically draining, literally. We didn't know why at the time. And then we thought like, okay, so if calendar and video is our sort of enemy and what we're trying to tackle here, because if we can solve those two things, then people's calendars will free up. We realized that, wow, we can't see the phone call for the screen, so to speak. It's right there in front of us, but it is the fastest, most effective way to communicate. So we decided then on voice. And at first doing voice, we realized that people were very awkward about it because there is a feeling of voice calls where you don't know how long it's going to take. Sometimes you don't pick up because you don't know if you have an hour, but it, even though the phone call might have required 1 or 2 minutes. So that's when the idea of 5 minute kind of came as a cap. And 5 minutes had this like colloquial term, you have 5 minutes. It's kind of what we no one can say no to 5 minutes. If you say no to 5 minutes of someone's time, you're not, I don't think you're a very nice person. So we kind of use that saying as a way of creating a behavior. And that's really how we started. We were like, what can you get done in 5 minutes? And quite quickly, the question became, what do you actually need more than 5 minutes for? We were like, okay, let's discuss the meaning of life. And we were done in like a minute. Seemingly the most complex question on the planet did not need a 60-minute Zoom call. Or any note takers. That's how we started. And at first we explored, could we solve kind of expertise? That was very tricky because most people who call themselves experts, what they have in common is that they're usually not. And like the real experts usually have the humility to say that they don't fully understand something, but they have strong perspectives that can be helpful or useful to other people. We then went over to advice, and our business model at the time was a marketplace where we had great success in finding people who wanted to give advice. We'd really come across a inefficiency there with a lot of people who wish they could give back more, a really strong need to help young people entering industries and so on. But what we built up this fantastic supply of just unbelievable people that I could never have imagined talking to, and no one called. And then we had to set out to learn, like, why aren't people calling? And it was both kind of scary. I think we were talking to a generation who weren't used to phone calls, but the main barrier, I think, was much deeper than that, which is, one of the most beautiful things about human nature is that we like to have a go ourselves. When my dishwasher is broken, I'm like, maybe I am a plumber. I want to have like 3, 4, 5 goes myself at fixing it. And then maybe I go to YouTube because I feel like that's the least embarrassing option is to try to learn how to do it. And then my absolute last resort, then I might call my dad before I even call the plumber, right? So we were actually, we'd found a beautiful idea that everyone agreed on in principle, but no one really agreed on in practice. Advice is kind of daunting. If you say you need advice, you first have to be strong enough to admit yourself that you don't know what you're doing. And that's one of the scariest things we can admit to ourselves as human beings. I mean, life is sort of like the endeavor to ignore that you're clueless. But then we still, along this whole journey, we kept building users. So we set out discovering like, okay, why are the people are using this every day? Why are they using it? And we stumbled upon the fact that a lot of very bright young people use advice as business flirting. It's a great way to get to know senior people. You kind of get them to feel revered and respected, and you lean into to kind of like fears and insecurities of that everyone has. And then you kind of convert that to like, thank you so much for your great advice. You know, I saw that you have a job listing on your website. Do you mind if I apply? And so on. So we realized that we stumbled upon sort of like a very beautiful version of LinkedIn, where advice was a fantastic format to get to know new people. And we became a professional network. And that's really where we started to see a lot of our marketing efforts that was targeted to the American and the UK market. Every time we did them, we grew users in India. And we saw that that's when we started to uncover this thing about, like, I think both culturally, there seems to be a fantastic fit. Like picking up the phone seems to be a very kind of like active behavior. But also it's a, for me, and this from my experience at Google, where I worked a lot with people from India, it's a country that really understands soft skills, the art of conversations, persuasion, and understands how important that is, specifically in technology. I mean, I think in Google days, half of our leadership was from India or had Indian descent. And that's where we kind of saw product market fit feels like the wrong expression, but it was definitely a market fit. And then again, we started to see, like, why are all these users engaging so much with the platform? And people were feeling like they were exercising, they were training. It was all about becoming better at talking to other people and exercising soft skills. And someone kind of described it as a leadership gym, and we were like, wow. And that's where we're at now. And we followed our users, both what they do, but also where they're based throughout this whole journey. Which has been most rewarding kind of experience in my career. And that kind of leads us to this conversation today. Sorry if that was a long-winded answer.
A very important answer. I can't help but think about the parallels between anyone and Network Capital. So while I was at Microsoft, Network Capital was a side hustle for me, something that I also did because I thought that a bunch of people reached out to me for advice, and there would be thousands of people like myself who would want to give advice. Maybe there should be a marketplace between advice seekers and advice givers. So I built a minimum viable product around it. And one of the surprising insights was that sometimes you could get very senior people to give 5 minutes or 15 minutes or 30 minutes of their time to teach or create courses. But finding the right audience at the right time can be difficult. So a professor from MIT, Andrew McCuff, he writes extensively on the future of work. I met him in Davos and managed to get 5 minutes for him to come and teach AI and the future of work. But nobody came. It was around 3 a.m. at the geography where I was, and very few people were awake. And he was surprised. I was surprised. We didn't know what to do. So we sort of recorded that session and then broke it down into small parts and created a course, which then millions of people watched. But it was very scary when you get a really scary person. Nobody's there to listen. But like all entrepreneurs, I improvised, you improvised, and we were fine. But there's another area that I wanted to tell you and the audience about. I also find video-based calls throughout the day, especially during the pandemic, particularly exhausting. And today, what we've replaced that with are office hours that people who give advice or who just have an opinion to share with others get on 15-minute calls with our subscribers to discuss a very concrete question and then move on. And that I feel is a lot more effective than, you know, long meandering conversations for hours. That is also important, but realistically, today's world doesn't permit such conversations with hundreds of people a day. But 15-minute conversations, you can have quite a few during a particular time box period. So that's why I really enjoyed the idea that you built and listening to you. Let's ask you how you built the team, how did Viera and others join, and what does a team look like today in terms of different roles that exist within the company?
Yeah, so basically, Vera has joined us today because she's the person we're trying to scale. When we started and we were focused more on expertise, that was kind of in our comfort zone. We as kind of consultants and issue area experts, we kind of understood that market. But then when we pivoted towards both advice and leadership, we realized that that wasn't at all our backgrounds and where we came from, and that's kind of where we met Vera, who is yeah, I can talk about her for 20 minutes and how exceptional she is. But the main thing that the team has always been focused on, you mentioned earlier, the notion of us coming from liberal arts backgrounds. I think we spent 10% of our days talking about technology and 90% talking about philosophy, because the fundamental kind of product that we have through these 5-minute conversation is they're not open-ended or arbitrary. There's a conversation topic set for everything on the platform to set parameters and to make sure that conversation can be meaningfully be had in that time. And I wonder if you can talk about that, Vera, a little bit, how that works and kind of the product side on that. But also at the end, Vera, please reflect on the idea, something we discovered about peer-to-peer versus kind of advisor and an advice seeker. That was also something I think is relevant for this journey.
So over to Vera, tell us.
Yes. Awesome. So basically, when it comes to conversations, there is obviously like our approach to everything we design is always human-centric, because our whole product is about two people connecting over a phone call. So that human element, it's really, really important in everything we do. And one thing that, through research and just trying stuff out, what we discovered is that, people right now are not used anymore to just getting on a phone call, or, how do you approach a stranger? And so the conversation topics came in there as very important to give people something to talk about, that it's meaningful and that it's going to create a connection in 5 minutes. And as Alfred said, it's very kind of a bit philosophical in nature, because what we discovered is that, sometimes you can talk to somebody about, I don't know, what your dream house looks like. Where would you like to live? But inside of that conversation and sharing those stuff, you can discover so much about a person. You can discover what their values are. You can discover what's important to them. You can discover, what political aspirations or leanings they have, even if they don't say those things. But it's so present in what they share. About the way they want to live, or the way they do things, or their aspirations in life. So that's the context of that. And designing something that works for 5 minutes is also really important. So having topics that are short, that are clear, but they still have that depth that people get to share in 5 minutes. And it's just so beautiful when you see that happen and people have the serendipitous conversations. So that's the way we went around with that. And then with regards with the peer-to-peer and what Alfred was mentioning, one thing we realized is that people, there was, when we had it like, oh, there's an expert, and then you're calling the expert, there was just something that would stop people in, oh my God, like I now need to talk with this person who, knows more than me. And there was like, I don't want to say a fear, but there was almost like, what am I going to ask this person? Like how do I approach this? When it comes to peer-to-peer, people feel freer to just talk with people who are at a similar level, or who are not, experts in a field. And what happens in that exchange is that something opens up, and in between people sharing their experiences or their outlooks on specific ideas or on specific elements of leadership or their journeys, the space opens up for people to see, okay, there is like, this is a new perspective. I never thought about this. Okay, like I can take something on or I can learn something from this. And, or, you know, like they kind of see, okay, I could try something new. And inside of that, people develop. Like we saw people really developing themselves just in having those conversations. And just another thing I want to say is that conversations are really, really crucial for development, right? Because the more time we spend talking about something, the more we actually become that, you know? And you could say that we are the conversations we have with people. So creating this network of conversations is something that it's really important for people's development.
Fantastic. I don't know if you've bought the domain doyouhave5minutes.com or not, but I think you should because it's such a catchy title. But anyone is more than 5 minutes. Like there's an aspect of leadership, there's an aspect of courses, conversational design. So could you just walk us through the entire canvas? And I want to tell you that I'm going to then segue into how you're trying to build your category of one and ask you about competition, because a lot in the audio economy has not worked. So let's approach it in a structured way. First, tell us about what does the entire product and say philosophy suite of anyone look like?
Alfred, shall we do it together?
You start and I can chime in.
Okay, so we have obviously, apart from the conversation, that 5 minute conversations, we created this leadership diagnosis tool, which is a quiz that you can take. And based on the answers, you did take it.
I teach a class in Oxford out of interest to undergrads, and I gave it to them.
Amazing. Well, the way we created that this quiz is based on Jung's archetypes and some other models. And basically what it does, it really looks at where are your strengths. And now obviously we as people have a lot of different things and a lot of different elements that we can do. But what happens is that you learn skills. So you might not be like good at maths at school. And what happens is usually your mom and dad or your teacher will say to you, okay, study some more math to get good at it, right? And what happens is that then you learn that skill. However, you also have natural talents that needs nurturing, because that's what comes naturally to you. You don't actually have to, you know, put too much effort into doing those things. And so the test is designed in such a way that it kind of strips down the skills you might have, and it really leaves you with what is your nature, like your natural talent, what naturally comes to you. And so we have these five profiles. So they're really like broad profiles of what comes naturally, more naturally to you. And based on that, you get a report, which is quite extensive in you know what your strengths are and what are the things you can grow in. And then we have in our app, we have two different features which are really important. And one is classes. And what classes are, there are 30-minute events that happen in the app where you join, and they have a team, they have specific topics, and you get to talk one-on-one with more people, right? So you have one-on-one conversation with a person, then with another, and the topic always changes, but it's always inside of the same team. Right. So the themes are based on leadership development. So those are like mindset and assertive leadership and negotiations and, you know, effective communication. And we have 18 of those. We have 18 classes. And basically, as people go through them and they have those conversations with their peers, over these 30-minute sessions, they basically develop their skills and their natural talents even more. So that's one thing. And then the other important thing is that, and I think this is true in general, like for any leadership. And when I talk about leadership, I just want to make it clear, I don't mean like senior people in a company. I think about leadership that lives within everyone. And, you know, some people know that they're leaders and some people need to discover that about themselves, but everyone has leadership, and leadership doesn't have to just be based on the role you play in a company, but it's based on, you know, who you want to be and how you want to develop. And you can always make a difference no matter where you're at. So inside of that, accountability is really important. So we have this other feature that it's just called check-in. And check-in is this very serendipitous phone call where you just join and it randomizes the person you're going to be matched with and the topic you're going to get. And so you really have just 5 minutes a day where you check in with another person, one of your peers that you might not know. So you also build connection and you build a peer group while you do that. You really get to then, you know, just have that conversation that kind of grounds you for the day and makes it clear for you, okay, what are the things I want to do today? Okay, what are the things I might have to let go of for today because I actually don't have the capacity to do them? And it really sets you up for having a positive day, basically.
I loved your term philosophy suite. And I think that's been, I'm going to steal that, the kind of underlying realization that we had with kind of like one of the powers of the app was the idea that you could get something that would otherwise be very, very hard to arrange or create outside of anyone. What's this feeling of connection, of safety? Like we feel very safe because we don't know the person we're speaking to. It's sort of that, like we're never more honest than when we talk to a stranger on an airplane, because we know it won't have any repercussions for us. Like nothing will happen. Everything is safe with that person. So I think that it creates this incredible space. The other thing, like, for me, leadership has been sort of co-opted by a very strange class of people that try to make it sound like it's about management. And I think that's one of the greatest misunderstandings there are, that that it's an idea of like managing down. I think leadership is prevalent sideways, downwards, upwards. And it's more defined as like people's abilities to help to make a group execute a task that is a priority for you. And we need a wide range of muscles to make that happen. Everything from, you know, inwards facing things like our ability to communicate in what way we do it, but also a great sense of empathy to understand other people's goals and objectives and so on. And the phone call format is absolutely brilliant for all of these kind of qualities and to exercise them. Because this is quite geeky, but something fortunate for us was that there was a lot of research done on things like Zoom fatigue, on meeting people in person and the different effectiveness of different communications challenge because of the pandemic. People got interested in it. And something that is very underexplored, but hugely fascinating, I mean, obviously to us, is something called vocalics, which is your voice's body language. And there was a study at Yale where they put, I think it was like 60 different test groups to have conversations in different environments. So everywhere from a Zoom call to a one-on-one meeting to a group meeting, etc. And the question they asked after was designed to figure out who had understood the other person the most and who had learned the most about the other person. And it was two people speaking in a dark room. Because when you can only hear the other person, suddenly you don't see all of the things we try to do with our arms and our hands to posture and cover for our weaknesses or defenses and accentuate, etc. But instead, we start to listen to frailties in the voice, to excitement in the voice, to maybe indecision in the voice. And we have all of these magical things in our voices that we've kind of forgotten about. and that is often kind of like we're distracted by hands and shoulders and facial expressions. But so to, in this particular kind of like instance of trying to both listen but trying to speak and becoming better at it, the phone call is just pretty much the only way to actually do it.
I love that. And talking about the philosophy suite, there's so much overlap between what we do at Network Capital and what you're doing at Anyone, that in the months to come, we should really collaborate on things like Serendipity Thursdays that we have, or some of the courses that we run on leadership, maybe some in-person discussions, but we can come to that. This works. In practice, there is definitely a market for it, but it hasn't been easy to carve out a niche for yourself. There have been lots of audio-based applications, leadership applications that have not quite found product market fit or have failed after finding product market fit. So tell us about what has worked, what is working, and sort of the evolution of the audio economy that you're observing.
It's a fantastic question, and I wish I had an answer to it. Some observations that I think has been interesting in kind of like the last 4 years. Obviously, when we started, out of nowhere, Clubhouse came, and podcasts was already extremely prevalent. There then started to become quite a lot of platforms for coaching and so on. And I think there's two things that we've always talked about, which is like, what is content and what is experience? And in a way, Clubhouse provided, in the beginning, it felt like it provided a new experience, but it was actually content. And I think when Twitter came out, I realized, you know, they said it created an expression that a blog post could have been a tweet. And I think Clubhouse, I felt quite quickly that room could have been a podcast. And so I think content and audio is like one thing. Because we've always focused on providing experiences, we felt like we're a little bit outside of the majority of sort of kind of like the audio economy in a way. And we've always focused on, you know, like I think we've had probably 1,000 people to date that have cried on our platform because those 5 minutes were so profound. The question was so good. It opened up something in them. And they started talking about something without realizing just how much you cared for them. So it's very reminiscent, kind of like the experience of coaching and therapy in a way, of this safe place where sort of just the right question can unlock something absolutely profound that you've kind of, either you tried to push back or you just didn't know that you were interested in. So we've always been on the experience side, which has been very, very tricky on a very tactical level, because we've engagement and activation has like always giving us quite a lot of false signals about like the power of the platform. I don't know how many times we've thought, wow, now it's taken off. And then it is, retention becomes like the big, on a very tactical level, becomes a big problem for us, because that wears off. And something we've realized with us is that we're sort of like in this exercise and gym category, where we have to create and build behaviors, and it's not immediately obvious, or hasn't been immediately obvious to people, kind of like the payoff or what they get for their investment. So especially for advice, I think people could feel immediate impact. So they could call and get career advice from someone, they would action that, and they was like, oh, wow, that was good. And then they would be like, a year later, they would be like, oh, I now have a problem again that I don't know how to solve other than with Anyone. I remember we had a user who joined who called me 15 months later and said, you worked at Google, right? I've now applied for a job there. Do you have any advice? So like we had this like 100% this person knew about the product, was really happy. Like if we did a product market fit survey with that person, we would have it. But the problem was it was like used it once a year. And that's a very hard way to scale a business. You would basically need you know, 8 billion users to have any sort of platform liquidity. But then what we then, when we started to go over to professional networking, where we realized that the tangible benefit it's really, really hard for two reasons. First one, like I can count on kind of like my five fingers, how many times networking has led to like a big outcome for me, where I got to know a person in a social context that then employed me, for example. But then the other problem is the reason I can only think about five moments is because we have an inherent beautiful thing that like, if I succeeded, it was because of me. If I failed, it was because of others. You know, everything that's good in me is in spite of my parents, and everything that's bad is their kind of failure in raising me. It's just this like inherent kind of like conflict we have in our head, which I think means, again, going back to that's part of like how we survive as human beings in this great unknown, as unknowing beings. We have to protect ourselves in that bit and attribute all success to ourselves and all failures to others. But so the problem we ran into when we felt like, wow, this is the new LinkedIn, was that people are a month or 6 weeks in just didn't see the payoff, either because it hadn't like directly paid off, or because they had self-defense mechanisms in place to not see how it paid off. And that's kind of where we're at this iteration today, where we're seeing extremely promising signals. But I think for us, on a pure marketing level, like we now know that this is a gym membership. You know, like the problem gyms have is that people like they go 3-4 times, they get this natural high. This is absolutely amazing. And then 6 weeks in, they prioritize something else, or they were too tired, or they had a tough day, or I'll do it tomorrow, etc. So that's kind of where we're at now, where people in the first month, they're like, it's a profound experience. They love it. Again, like when we've done too early on product market fit service, so many times we're like, wow, we've nailed it. And then kind of platform liquidity. So that's terrible jargon. But the idea that you have enough people on the platform at one moment, so if you call, someone will answer. That's kind of like a fundamental thing, both a kind of a marketplace needs to have, but for us, there couldn't be anything more important, because if someone makes three calls and no one picks up, they'll never come back. So for us, that's the thing we're trying to solve now. And we're doing that very consciously by kind of highlighting this idea that leadership really is a muscle that needs to constantly be trained. And I've had this kind of profound personal experience with that, where my home is currently a leadership gym, because I have a 3- and a 4-year-old. And every day I have to like really get into my toolkit of all the tools I know to how to get them to stop playing Lego at 6:30 in the evening and transition into the bedroom. Like I have to, you know, like I have to put myself in their shoes. I have to think like a 4-year-old, what are their priorities at the moment? What are their objectives? And then I have to think about my persuasion skills. How do I avoid bribes and rewards? Because then it will be trickier down the line. I set a bad precedent. Suddenly they will need X in order to ever stop playing Lego, and I can't do that. So I have to be so creative. I then have to exhibit some authority. I also have to lead by example. You know, I have to go to bed when I'm tired and show them that that's what I do, etc. But for a lot of people, that's kind of what we hope anyone can provide. It's just knowing that there is this environment where they can exercise these muscles. It's also like, I think something that is interesting with two interesting things that we're trying to crack, to get back to your question, in order to solve this problem. I think there is one really interesting thing in one-on-one conversation, that two people can train two different things using the same conversation. So the conversation topic can be, tell us about a time where you achieved something against all odds. And person number one can be training persuasion, and person number two can be exercising active listening or empathy. So you can really, like, that's one of the things we think is quite profound with what we built now, is this idea that both, we don't need to match two people with the same need. we need to match two people that has come for the same reason. So that's kind of one of them. But otherwise, I think with going back to kind of like just broadly the audio economy, the other thing that obviously happened with AI and with audio interfaces with AI, etc., is we're now so happy that we're not in in kind of like advice territory where we commodified it. Obviously, we were like, you can now get advice from like 10 people in an hour and all of these different things, because AI again has added sort of to like the knowledge stack in a way, where when I talked about the plumbing example, now the first thing I do is go to ChatGPT and then YouTube, you know, like it has come in there. Whilst the experience, going back to that, will, I think the need will be greater and greater, because the use of chat interfaces and AI will isolate us even further. Coming out of a pandemic that kind of like forcefully isolated us, I think this technology will isolate us even more. And I think that's when something like network capital, and with anyone, and what I hope is that the need for kind of peer-to-peer connection and human connection and the exchange of human experiences, I think that will kind of like be this unintended consequence of the proliferation of AI and everything, is that we will seek places where we can meet new people, we can meet peers, and we can find safe places to explore identities, our futures, and so on together. That's just something I think vis-a-vis audio.
Yeah, that's really well said, Alfred. The way I look at it would be that, say, network capital people come to attend a course on careers in product management, and they decide to practice, say, persuasion among product, and they do that on anyone. Or they met at an event in Cambridge, and then they decided that they could perhaps do some coaching for each other, based on, you know, their leadership needs, and they do that on anyone. So it's very complementary, because our philosophical suite is very similar. And that's basically how we decide to partner with organizations. So I really like that. But I want to double down with both you and Viera on the challenges. So one thing is really having brilliant prompts and designing the conversations so that people's 5 minutes are effective to unstructured 50 minutes. But still, like, finding data to improve the system is not a trivial engineering challenge. So I'd love to hear about that. And second, I'd love to also hear about some of the challenges that you had to experience before you came up with the ideal conversational design. Like, what would that process look like? And lastly, then we'll conclude with some discussions on capital, like how will you make money? How are you making money? That kind of stuff. So let's start with data and then move to conversations.
Vera, do you want to talk a little bit about how you give feedback after the calling experience?
Yes, I can talk about that. So, so the way we obviously like collect data, there is an element of quality to it, right? Just in the nature of what we are creating. So we collect quantitative data in terms of, you know, how many people come onto the app and how many calls happen, and all of that we do obviously have. But what we realize is that the most important thing and the most important data comes after a person has a call, when they can actually say how that call made them feel, or like what that call enhanced in them. So do you feel more creative? Do you feel more empowered? Do you feel more open-minded after this call, right? So people, in the way our calls are designed in the app, is that after the call, you get asked those questions, and you also get asked your reflections. So anything that came up for you, or anything that, you know, the person you talked to contributed to you, you can basically write it in the reflections. And one of the things that we're looking at right now is how can we take those data, this qualitative data, and actually create it in a visual way, so that our callers can actually see that for themselves, and they can see, oh, you know, in this amount of time, I actually like had, you know, I don't know, 10 calls, and these 10 calls made me more creative, open-minded, more courageous, or you know, whatever it is. And these are the reflections I had, and this is where right now what we're working on is how to actually present that back to the user. So that's where we're at with data. And and then you ask about conversations, right? And how, like, and the research around that. Well, that was a lot of trial and error, to be perfectly honest. We had to really, like, kind of understand. Sometimes, you know, you might think you have an amazing topic, you know, wow, this would be great to talk to somebody about. And then when you are in the conversation, you realize that it's not, you know, or, you know, and when I say it's not, is because a topic, although it could be a great topic, you might end up having a conversation that is just like a yes or no. You know, I might ask you, like, which kind of animal would you like to be? And you can then say, I want to be a giraffe. And I say, well, I want to be a whale. And then the conversation kind of stops there, right? And we still have 4 minutes and a half to go, right? So it's really like about how you actually like phrase that. And then you have the opposite of that, is where, you know, you give a prompt that it's way too much and people don't get to unpack it in 5 minutes. So it was really important to kind of find a balance of what would work for those 5 minutes. And what we discovered is that having like open-ended questions but still structured is what is important, because so really asking people, I don't know, give me one experience where you, I don't know, failed at something or where you succeeded at something. That's like a very clear prompt. People have the capacity to tell you that in 2-3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, like, you know, it still enter, like it still kind of covers the time. And you learn so much out of having an exchange like that. So yeah, it was a very interesting, I think it was a very interesting journey. And at the beginning, we kind of allowed for people to write their own topics. And then we realized pretty quickly that that didn't work, because not everyone is a copywriter and not everyone is an amazing, amazing topic designer. So we then actually went into creating a library of topics, basically, so that people can choose from those. And we add those for each event and for each class in a way that then brings intentionality to the conversation. Yeah.
And something that we kind of accidentally discovered when we were very focused on advice is that advice is probably sort of like the conversation topic where we project the most, where if someone gives me advice on something, I will immediately start talking about what I wish I would have done in a situation, not necessarily what I did in that situation. And it will also be very contextual for me, and I will not have a very clear idea of what that context was. So you could have someone who would be like, hi, I'm in the beginning of my career. I'm thinking about doing an arts degree. And then this person who deeply regretted having done a bad arts degree will tell the other person, absolutely do not do an arts degree. You know, you should do engineering, because this person wished that they had done engineering. And in 5 minutes, you just can't get the context about that person wanting to do the arts degree. Do they have, you know, the talent? Do they have the financial means? Do they have, what is the kind of job market situation, et cetera? So we very quickly, as an advice marketplace, pivoted away from actual advice. And we realized that what people needed in terms of advice is to increase a spectrum of possibilities and experiences. So the most helpful thing for me when I'm going to make an important decision is knowing kind of what 10 other people have done in a similar situation, so that I can put myself on this spectrum and make a decision similar to what someone else did. So then we kind of changed. So instead of saying my top five career tips, we changed it to what are my top five career experiences. So everything and every topic on the app is very carefully designed around the sharing of perspectives and experiences, not telling people what to do or how to do things, because that can become dangerous. So that's just a side note.
I really like this answer, and that leads me to my two final questions. One is that you've been around for a while, 3.5+ years, a great job, still standing, which is not true for most startups in and around that space. Tell us about your path to monetization. How are you thinking about it? There are many ways to do it. There's subscription, there's building a marketplace, there's ads, there are partnerships. So what's the process like? And are you thinking of raising additional capital, if at all you can share it publicly?
Yeah. So I think we're a little bit like old school in the way that like we're still chasing product market fit, and then we want to learn from users what they would pay for. I think our inherent business model and what the platform is built for is still a marketplace. And we think, especially with kind of like today, the creator economy, that if we succeed at this platform, we will have people who will have more demand than they can provide for. And the way to solve that kind of asymmetry is by monetizing it, and that people can get paid for phone calls. So we kind of feel a little bit right now that we're trying to still find kind of like the go-to-market product proposition. And where we think we'll end up is still in marketplace land. Similarly, a lot of the apps that we have studied in order to build the current kind of value proposition, they're all subscription-based. They provide such great kind of like training or quality of content, etc. So we've looked at everything from dieting apps to very high profile networks, etc. And subscription works for them. So I think those are two things that we're very open up to trying. But meanwhile, we will, yes, raise more capital in order to keep exploring what that is and where we can end up.
Yeah. And final question, and this is where I'd like both you and Vieira to chime in as well. In 10 years, if you're wildly successful, what would the world of audio-based learning and networking really look like? What's your dream?
I think we've, since day one, we've known that a 5-minute phone call could change the world. We just don't know which one yet. And yes. I think, you know, we really have dreams where most people in the world in 10 years will in some way have had an experience on anyone that shaped them. They will remember a phone call, or they will have met people that they're now working with. And it's really about kind of facilitating connections between people and for that to have had a positive effect. And that's something that I feel that most social networks have failed at. They've been incredible at creating like a digital platform for your current contacts. But if I today want to find a new interesting, you know, collaborator, like I would not go to LinkedIn. If I wanted to meet new people, I wouldn't do it on Facebook or Instagram. But I think what anyone so uniquely can provide is this like simple notion of speed dating between people. Like when I speak to people at anyone, like a minute in, I'm like, I want to take a coffee with this person, or I might not want to speak with this person again. But I like there is something kind of like going back to audio as well. Part of the problem with video conversations, so not video content, not watching a video, but being in a video conversation, is that the brain is tricked into thinking it's 3D. So we go into kind of, our brain goes into hyperdrive because we think that we can see 3D and what's going on behind you and all of these different things. So that's why we're exhausted after a video conversation. What happens in audio conversations is the opposite. It releases dopamines and endorphins because it activates the creative side of the brain, where we're trying to imagine where the other person is. We're trying to imagine what that noise was. And we're kind of walking around with a mental picture of the other person that we're speaking to. And that is creating positive energy and dopamine. So afterwards, you almost have a natural high. What this means is that it's memorable. And I think I can remember maybe 75% of the thousands of phone calls I've had on anyone. I have like strong, strong memories of conversations. Like a year ago, I had this incredible conversation with a 65-year-old German VC walking around in the countryside with his dog talking about Swedish children's literature and how what a profound impact it had had on his life. And that was a 5-minute call. And like I remember it vividly. And that was like an experience rather than content that I watched. So I think that's, you know, we want to facilitate these kind of life-changing experiences, connections between people, in the simplest term, kind of like maybe, you know, it's speed dating, but it is for professional and for kind of life encounters where we are focusing. What do you see in the future, Vera, if we have succeeded?
I mean, everything you said, I definitely second that. And what I would add is that for me, it's definitely like, I think, and I deeply believe that, you know, conversations can shift society. And I think that most of the things we see that are not working in society is based on the fact that people do not know how to have conversations about those difficult topics. And I think that with anyone, people can really like learn how, like relearn again, how to have conversations, how to use language in a constructive way. And therefore then develop all the skills that they need to have those also like outside of the platform and really have a big impact in the world. So that's what I see in 10 years time.
Love that. You know, personally, what I would love in addition to what both of you described is the fact that people from vastly different political, philosophical, social backgrounds have 5-minute conversations with others who don't share their belief.
Yeah.
And then find a common ground and start companies or, you know, become really good friends. And typically when you think of networking, it often starts with a drop, like a minimum viable action, minimum viable step, and then it can scale. So if the minimum viable action by default happens on any one or platforms like that, we would see a lot of that proliferate. On Network Capital, I know people who've started unicorns together, who raised a lot of capital together, got married, started, you know, created jobs for each other. And it all started with like, you know, single comment or a post or listening to a conversation like this. So yeah, a 5-minute conversation can truly change your life. We just don't know which one. Thank you so much, Alfred and Vera, for joining us on a Friday morning.
Thank you so much.